All right, good evening. Welcome out on Monday, February 17th, this cold, cold day, the Columbia City Council meeting. I'd like to call this meeting to order and ask all those who are able to please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Sheila, can you please call roll?
Yes, Mr. Waterman?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Ms. Buffalo?
Here.
Ms. Carroll?
Here.
Ms. Meyer?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
Mr. Foster?
Here.
All right, well, good evening, and thanks all for coming out. The public have multiple opportunities to speak at Columbia City Council meetings. We have public hearing, old business, new business portions of the agenda. I do ask that people restrict their comments on those to the legislation being discussed. We also have general comments at the end where you can talk about anything you want to talk about, whether it's on the agenda or not. Individuals are given 3 minutes, and groups or organizations affected by the legislation can request 5. I do ask to make sure I acknowledge that so that Kel can make sure the timer says 5 minutes. I do ask people avoid applauses or boos or demonstrations that might impact people's feelings about testifying or talking in front of public. We address issues, not individuals, so please do not attack one another, personal attacks, including city staff. Disruptions will be addressed with a warning, and if necessary, we will do recess. Now, up next on our agenda, we have the minutes. Council received the February 3rd, 2025 minutes from the city clerk. They weren't very complicated, Sheila, so I would make a motion to approve the February 3rd, 2025 minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Roy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Thank you for that. Are there any changes to the agenda? Seeing none, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as posted. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Nick. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Up first on our agenda is appointments to boards and commissions. We have multiple opportunities for people to give back and have their input heard at the city, including boards and commissions. So look on Wednesday for the next postings of vacancies. But for tonight, we have a few applicants and a few vacancies. So up first, we have the Building Construction Codes Commission. We have a few vacancies on this one. We have one applicant, Paul Prevost, for the minor contractor. So he's the only applicant. If all are agreeable?
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Up next, we have the Columbia Sports Commission. Again, we have one applicant for one vacancy. Neil Wilkinson can be appointed if all are agreeable.
Great.
No. All right. And we will now do roll call because we have 3 applicants for 2 vacancies on the Commission on Human Rights. So Sheila, will you please call roll for the first vacancy?
Mr. Waterman?
Paige Lubring.
Ms. Peters?
Paige Lubring.
Ms. Buffalo?
Mayor Sood?
Ms. Carroll?
Paige Lubert?
Ms. Meyer?
Paige Lubering.
Mr. Lovelady?
Mia Snyder.
And Mr. Foster.
Mira Sood.
Paige Lubering received 4 votes.
Okay. Will you, for the second vacancy, please?
Mr. Waterman?
Mira Sood.
Ms. Peters?
Mira Sood.
Ms. Buffalo?
Mira Sood.
Ms. Carroll?
Mira Sood.
Ms. Meyer?
Mira Sood.
Mr. Lovelady?
Mia Snyder.
And Mr. Foster.
Mira Sood.
Mira Sood received 6 votes.
Okay. Up next for our food council, we have 3 vacancies, and the 3 applicants are reapplying. So if all are agreeable, Anna Meyer, Katie Mulliter, and Gabriella Vera will be reappointed to the food council. Okay. Moving on, we have 1 applicant for the Mayor's Council on Physical Fitness and Health. So far, all agreeable, Leslie Deshaw will be appointed.
No objection.
Parking Advisory Commission, we have 1 applicant, Shane Lowe. All are agreeable for that?
No objection.
No objection, all right. Public Transit Advisory Commission, this is a trend, y'all. 1 applicant, William Brumbaugh, can be appointed if all are agreeable. All are? Okay.
Yep.
And then for our next, for the Tax Increment and Financing Commission, we have 1 applicant who currently owns a home here and is moving back from Pittsburgh, but is still a registered voter in Pittsburgh. I checked, and we've had this one vacancy for a while, but this group has not met. So I would be okay appointing Duncan Binbutel, unless there's any objection. I called him this afternoon to confirm this information. Is there any objection, or else we can re-advertise?
Yeah, no objection based on the information. Thank you.
Okay. Is that okay with you all? All right. Thank you. All right, so we'll appoint for that one. Thank you, Sheila, for pointing it out. And then moving on now, members from the public can request contact the city manager's office by noon on the Wednesday before the Columbia City Council meeting to request scheduled public comment. Scheduled public comments cannot be on items that are on that night's agenda. And of note, it has been typical practice of City Council to ask for additional follow-up of staff at the end of the council meeting. So tonight we have three scheduled public comments. I'd like to first ask Deborah Kness to come forward to speak. Is Deborah Kness, I assume? All right, can we contact her maybe because of the weather? Was not able to come out? All right, now I'd like to ask Ruth Williamson to please come forward to speak.
Hello, thank you.
The magic will happen. There, it happened.
Awesome, thank you so much. Good evening, Madam Mayor, council members, and staff. My name is Ruth Williamson, and I am an undergraduate researcher here at the University of Missouri in the Agroforestry Department. I am here to present a different option to putting in an extensive mountain bike trail at Gans Creek Recreation Area. What if I told you that spending time in nature could not only help your anxiety, but also prevent cancer? According to the leading expert in forest medicine and immunology, Dr. Ching Li, MD, PhD, that is exactly what forest bathing can do. Forest bathing is described as the art and practice of slowly walking through the forest with the intention of experiencing nature with all five senses. This is different from general recreation activities because it focuses on the mind-body connection to nature rather than improving health through vigorous exercise. Thus, this is a practice that is accessible to communities that are often left out from nature access, like the disability community, the elderly community, and also our disabled veteran community. Dr. Lee from Nippon Medical School in Tokyo has been researching the effects of forest bathing on humans for over three decades. His team has discovered that nature exposure in the form of a forest bathing walk can reduce stress and anxiety, improve your immune system, and your number of anti-cancer cells. Until recently, the practice of forest bathing has been most popular in the East Asian culture where it originated from. However, with the growing cost of health insurance and the increasing mental health issues in our country, there is a growing desire to integrate this into the United States. Rather than adding an additional set of mountain bike trails, I suggest the implementation of a municipally designated forest bathing area in Gans Creek. Gans Creek Recreation Area is the prime location for this due to its flourishing cedar tree community and proximity to running water, both of which have been shown to improve the effects of forest bathing. The area you plan to put this mountain bike trail is very erodible due to the soil that sits on top of bedrock, and so there's a lot of chance of erosion, especially when you have bikes running through there. And so having a single walking trail would be a much safer option for people and the local environment. And not only will this support community health and bring in nature and health lovers to the area, it would also set an example for other people to follow. Also, like to share that here at the university, we have been researching forest bathing for the past 2.5 years. And we are using state-of-the-art technology called thermal desorption to collect different samples from forested area and non-forested area right here in Columbia. And if this trail was implemented as a forest bathing site, the agroforestry lab where I work, we would be able to have a location to conduct research that would combine people and the environment at the same time. And all the while, we would also be able to let the city have more increased tourism from having more people wanting to come and enjoy forest bathing as an activity, and we could also with the forest in place and have a high quality research from the university, we could easily become the leading city in ecotourism and forest medicine in the United States, bringing wellness and income to our already flourishing city. So, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, it'll magically go away. All right, I'd now like to ask Jim Windsor to please come forward to speak.
Good evening. Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. I went to one of the candidate forums, and I heard candidates discussing the public good or the common good and the professional staff letting council know what should be done. So I wanted to cover three things quickly, if I can. The first is the transmission line, and it's come down to two choices, which I understand you're waiting for another consultant study. I don't think that's necessary. Siemens said that the Nifong route was the least expensive. The professional staff said it is the best, it best fits the needs of the system now and in the future. Logically, there's no way that the Chapel Hill route is going to be less expensive because there is a distribution line that will probably have to be undergrounded before you can tear the transmission line down because it's feeding the customers there and it's actually in the backyards, whereas the Nifong route is not in people's backyards. The distribution line there, the transmission line can be built and then the distribution line moved over. And while there was $5 million in the budget 9 years ago when the project was paused, no undergrounding of distribution should be done because we've already wasted enough money over this time and it should, just needs to be built and get it done. The second item, there's many concerned citizens in Columbia that believe we need to address the climate, what they call a climate emergency, by putting, requiring the utility to buy 100% renewables. I believe that is wrong. It is the bad use of utility resources. I believe the city staff, the utility staff, know that's true. It would put the utility at in a very dangerous place financially. And in reality, all of that renewable energy is going into the grid anyway. It would make essentially no difference. We should be looking at what can we do in Columbia to reduce carbon impact. That won't do it. And it's an intermittent resource, and it really does not do what it is promoted to do. It does not replace fossil fuels. The last item is, and staff may tell you a different thing, I wanted to talk about the property tax issue related to the water plant in particular, which was, I believe, fraudulently annexed, and the council was essentially lied to in 2019 when it was told there was no physical impact. In reality, water customers had to pay an additional over $400,000 to the general fund. That's a physical impact on the enterprise. And when all of the work is done on the current work that's being done on the water plant, that amount will go up another $900,000. You're going to get another water rate increase proposal probably coming. I would encourage you to actually look at this closely and not put the burden on water customers. And you can change what tax rate is used and at least change it for the water plant because of the fraudulent way it was done. And only collect what the Columbia rate is, not the entire Boone County. And that way the money can go to the needs of water customers. And if the general fund needs increase, then present it to all of us and justify it. Don't hide it behind a sneaky method that should never have occurred. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. All right, moving on to public hearings. We have one public hearing this evening. Sheila, will you please read public hearing 625?
Public hearing 625 is the proposed construction of renovations to the existing structure located at 1020 South El Chaparral Avenue to provide office and interim fire crew spaces associated with the design and construction of fire station number 10.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, Shane Creech, Director of Public Works. As our community continues to grow, especially in the East Central Corridor, It requires that additional capabilities be provided for both fire, emergency response personnel, and administrative staff. To meet that need, City Council authorized the purchase of property at the intersection of Route WW and El Chaparral on June 20th, 2023. This purchase included a two-story, approximately 7,500 square foot former church building. Plans have been developed to convert this existing building into office space on the upper level for the Fire Marshal's Division and the lower level into a temporary fire station until a new permanent fire station can be built on the same site. Plans also call for an addition to house fire apparatus and paving to effectively handle the weight and turning movements associated with a fire truck. Staff previously held an interested parties meeting on the project on March 27th, 2024, with 18 people in attendance. This initial project is estimated to cost approximately $2.5 million and will be funded with the existing capital improvement sales tax funds. The permanent fire station is proposed to be funded as part of the first year of the 2025 capital improvement sales tax. The fire chief's with me here tonight, and we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Does council have any questions for staff? All right, seeing none, I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. Would anyone from the public wish to speak on the proposed renovation of the building for the future fire station number 10?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. My mere comment is, I understand we have a lot of trouble between county and city issues. This is going to resolve that issue. I did not get a clarification. Is this the former Methodist church that we're talking about? Thank you very much.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak? Seeing none,
Renee Carter, Second Ward. I just had a question. Is this close to the county fire department? Okay. And is there a reason for that, if someone could answer?
Anybody else from the public wish to speak? All right, we'll go ahead and close our public hearing. So I know we had this discussion, I think, when we purchased the property, but I don't know, Chief, if you want to address the question about this location.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for the opportunity, and I appreciate your question, because I think it's on everybody's mind. I think there is, first off, I wasn't here when this transaction, and a really out-of-the-box idea for what I've discovered is probably the biggest priority for us right now is getting service to that part of our community, because it is underserved the way we're currently set up. Most of the responses to that area are coming from Station 5 and Station 1, and so we have an extended response time. The station that's across the street is a volunteer fire district station that used to be in their area until, as the city grew, we continued to annex, and now they're probably in the wrong spot for their territory, but they have no jurisdictional authority in the city, and they're not staffed. So when we look at capability, capacity, and expectation, there is a very large disparity between the expectation of the people that live in our community in terms of response time and capability. Response time is important. It is critical. If anybody can hold their breath more than a minute or two, it will reinforce that level of importance to all of us, that it's very critical to someone's survival. Or if you're trapped inside of a house, and we have to, and we do get the call, our commitment to our community is that we will save you. We are strategically located, trained, and equipped to save you. That's the expectation of our community. But that requires people, it requires training, and it requires us to be in those neighborhoods. So the volunteer fire station, they're not the same level of service. And the people that are in the county have a much different expectation. They have an expectation that is not one of an accredited career fire department and agency with, thankfully, we're blessed to have the support from our community and back those expectations up. So It is confusing. It's certainly not the way that I would hope that this would work, that there would be one fire station, but unfortunately, we are in a situation where we have to provide service, and we have that higher level of expectation, and we're putting people into a fire station that are going to be there for 24 hours a day. So that means bunk rooms and all of the things that come along with actually having a professionally staffed fire department. So I can.
Thank you, Chief.
Oh, okay. I'll drop it.
I was like, I don't want to make you have to go on and on since, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak to it.
Thank you. Other questions? Yeah. Betsy, this is your firehouse.
I don't have any questions. I'm just happy that we finally have a spot. For 10 years, we've been looking for a place. And yeah, this was sort of questionable, and it was like, really, that there's a church that's, you know, that's up for auction, and we potentially could buy it. But we have looked at, I can't tell you how many spots out there trying to find a place for a fire station. So this is where we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
This will provide adequate coverage to the east part.
Well, good for you and for the people that came before that thought out of the box to make this happen, and then also for our labor group for willing to be able to make some sacrifices and go into that basement, into that temporary solution until we get a full-time department there, full-time fire station.
Nick, you had, Don and then Nick, sorry. I'll come down there.
Real quick, looking at the council memo, once this is approved, roughly what's the timeline on being able to staff it?
Sure. Well, the bid calls on this same agenda tonight. It's on the consent agenda. So that'll allow us to put it out to bid. It's going to take a couple months there to get that going. Probably be construction season when they get started. So the timing of this is such that we hope that we can get it bid and get it under construction right at the beginning of construction season and have them in there, you know, in the fall, I'd say.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Nick.
Just curious about one thing that's in the description here about in the master plan that this will contribute to a bikeable and walkable community. I assume that what we're seeing here are new sidewalks on either side of the building. Is that referring to that, or is there anything else in addition to that?
Any project that we do
includes that.
I would include that. The county neighborhood doesn't necessarily have that, and then MoDOT's Route WW doesn't either in all locations. Hopefully over time it all grows to that, though.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Other questions or also council comments? No, I appreciate it coming to us quick. Let's see. So if agreeable, I'm going to motion to authorize staff to proceed with the construction of renovations to the existing building at the site of the future fire station number 10, located at 1020 South L. Chaparral Avenue. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Betsy. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Moving on. Thank you. All right. We have no old business this evening, so I'll ask Sheila to please read the items under consent twice and call roll.
Items under the consent agenda include bills 1525, 1625, 1725, 1825, 1925, 2025, 2125, 2225, 2325, and resolutions 1925, 2025, and 2125. Bills 1525, 1625, 1725, 1825, 1925, 2025, 2125, 2225, and 2325, and resolutions 1925, 2025, and 2125. Mr. Waterman.
Yes.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo.
Yes.
Ms. Carroll.
Yes.
Ms. Meyer.
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady.
Yes.
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
Thank you. We have no new business items this evening, so I'll ask Sheila to read the introduction items in first reading.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 24, 25, 25, 25, 26, 25, 27, 25, 28, 25, 29, 25, 30, 25, 31, 25, 32, 25, 33, 25, 34, 25, and 35, 25, first reading.
Thank you. Moving on to our report section. So up first, we have Report 1025. This is the Water and Light Advisory Board's Fiscal Year 24 Annual Report that we received. Dave, do you want to point out any highlights from it or make any comments as staff?
No, I don't have any. This is the board's report to council.
Okay.
And so I just put it on the agenda.
I appreciate that. And I don't see anybody from the commission or the board here. Well, thank you for it. I think the one question I had, they mentioned our work session that we had with them about renewable energy. And I didn't know, did that go back to the Waterland Advisory Board before it comes to us?
We can do that if you'd like.
I just didn't know when it was coming back to us.
We've got the ordinance revisions pretty much drafted. We're working on the policies that went to accompany it.
Okay.
And then we're planning on coming back sometime in April. But if you'd like us to take it to the board first, I'd be happy to do that.
No, we're happy for having it come back to council. Did you have a question, Nick?
Yeah, about one thing on number four. They've developed a set of utility rate metrics to evaluate rate affordability, and they've done this, completed that for water. Is it safe to assume that they're continuing that work toward electric as well?
I think that is something they desire to do for electric as well. It's a lot more complex, but I think they're trying to figure out something with it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other comments for Dave? No, appreciate it. Thank you, Dave. Moving on, we have our winter weather report. We had requested this after some of the snow incidents in January. So, Shane, thank you for putting it all together. Do you want to just talk about the report?
Like I said, we just provided the report as requested, and Richard Stone's with me here tonight. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
I'd like to first say thank you for being here, since I bet you're planning right now is winter response to the current event that we're under or about to start. Questions from council for staff? Yes, Nick.
Shane, I know we heard from a number of folks during and following the two events, and I'm wondering if after your review you've identified anything that you could adjust, or is there anything that council needs to look at in terms of adjusting, in terms of policy and that kind of thing? Any recommendations at all?
I think the only thing I would tell you is some of the stuff that's in the report. The South Salt Dome will allow us to use a little bit some different technologies when we have that up and going, and also be able to respond faster. So that's in the works. I think that's the biggest thing that would change what you saw with those first two events. As far as other than that, you know, we have a policy and a plan in place, and we work that based on the number of resources that we have. You can always add to that in different ways, but to dramatically change that would take a lot of resources. And so I, you know, some of that has to do with what you all want what that response to look like. Somebody said something about more trucks. Well, each truck's $280,000, and I would need two people because I'm going to run two 12-hour shifts. So that's another $160,000. So you're looking at $500,000 for every truck you put on the road, at least that first year. And so really it's just a matter of how you want to balance all that. I think the two events we had at the beginning of January were unique and different. And so I would highly suggest don't blow up a policy based on those two events is what I'd tell
you. Yeah, I'm not here to explode anything. What I'm wondering is, I know that this time you dispatched some backhoes to deal with some ice on some roads and that kind of thing. That's not common, is it? I mean, that was an unusual. So that was an innovative approach that was really based on these two events happening back to back.
It was.
And what that presented.
And it was the precipitation we had in those two events that sleet and ice on that front end really created a much larger snowpack than we're used to seeing. So much so that, you know, as I think I said last time, the plow is just going to push snow. It can't lift it. It was so cold that the salt wasn't going to work. And so we took backhoes in to clear up some problem areas that kind of lingered. But it takes some time to do that. I don't have as many backhoes as I do snow plows. So it takes quite a while to do that. So that's not normal. And we hope we aren't into that situation, you know, for quite some time from now.
You too.
So
thanks.
Yeah, Lisa.
I have a question regarding any suggestions for how we can improve communication to the city, I mean, to residents, because when we were unable to get to their streets, and then it impacted their trash pickup. And there were occasions where we had like one street where the trash was picked up and you could look down the other street and it wasn't because the roads weren't prepared for the trucks to be able to get through, and then there were delays. So I realized this was a freak event, but I'm wondering from your perspective if you think we could improve on communication to residents to help alleviate a lot of the frustration that many were that were feeling, if we could have communicated a little bit better up front.
Well, I would probably have to defer that to either the communications team, and I don't exactly know how solid waste communicated during that time. You know, we, like I said, we're going to follow policy, and we're going to do what we do during a snow event. As far as what other departments and divisions do, they have to make those decisions themselves. And so you'd probably have to talk to them to get that answer.
Thank you.
So Carlin, did you want to?
Yeah, so our approach for communication is that we have one central point, and so people will send emails to Sydney and Brian, and they would put up a communication plan. So I want to say every couple of hours there was a report of this is where we're at. And so if there's something that's going on with either with the utility where there's an issue, or if there's something with where the plows are, it's that the constant communication of here's where we're at, here's what we're doing. So what I would say is that if people stay tuned to the website, and I know not everybody has access to the internet, but that is definitely one place where you'll see that information going constantly. Also, we send out press releases from that same information to the local media.
Maybe to that point, that could be sort of, we could help with that, right? So sending it out to us too to also share, and then making sure that the consistency is across departments sharing the same message. Just like you're borrowing drivers from utilities and parks and rec, maybe they can also put out the communications that you're sharing about where things are getting and going out. Betsy, did you have a comment? Question.
I think there's also on the website something that talks about what roads have been plowed or not plowed, and as they're going along. And so maybe if we let our constituents know that they can check there, along with then making sure if that map isn't accurate for some reason, or somebody plowed it, they think they plowed it, but those of us trying to get out can't. I mean, maybe that helps too. So I think maybe making people know what the city already has available that they can tap into.
Can I ask Shane, you mentioned in the report something about lane miles per operator. And then you said they could go farther or longer. What was this referring to? Basically a potential change that you could made similarly to adding additional trucks. It says most agencies it's between 22 and 35 lane miles per truck responding. Public Works currently operates at 36.4, which is, I guess I was more of like, I don't think we should go past, but it sounds like we're already going past the national standard.
So, and I wouldn't necessarily call it a national standard, because I think every city makes that decision themselves. That's kind of the
our practice.
The average or something like that. The other thing I think it's important to understand is we do borrow from other departments, and that brings that number down. So while if we had to fight snow by ourselves, we're above that average. The normal folks that I take from Parks and Rec, mainly from Parks and Rec and City Utilities, but there's other departments that have some folks that contribute to that, that brings us down into that, you know, into that window.
And I think just probably one of the questions we'll have is going into fiscal year 26 is, you know, while you might not want to put $500,000 is there a forecast potential growth that we might be expecting, you asking us for additional resources for both responding to this, but then also just other responses that streets need? Because I think you've both mentioned before, our staffing levels have not grown at the same rate that the city has. We've gotten really efficient with the resources that we have, but just thinking as we continue to grow, what might that look like in the future? Yeah. All right, well, thank you for that, and good luck this week. Actually, while you're there, do you want to comment to what to expect this week? Do you already have crews on staff right now ready?
I'm gonna let Richard handle that.
Richard, might not be a bad idea just to put out there that we're forecasted to expect snow tomorrow multiple times, I think I saw.
Yeah, snow's probably going to start overnight here, about 11 o'clock, midnight. Probably snow through the day, or through the evening, then all through the day tomorrow. There's still some variability in forecasts. Probably going to be between 3 and 6 inches is probably what we're looking at. One of the biggest drawbacks that we're facing is it's going to be 0 or negative degree temperatures for lows and single digits for highs for the next couple of days. So snowpack will be an issue. Salt will not work effectively below about 15 degrees. So once the snow stops and we get a little bit of sun, pavement temperatures may warm up, and that'll give us a chance to basically do a little better job towards the end of the week in getting back down to bare pavement. But we're probably going to be faced with snowpack for the next several days. And that could be on every route, major routes as well as neighborhood streets. So we're going to dig out as fast as we can. The good part about it is next week's in the 50s. You know, if we can get through there and get everything back to passable, we may have to deal with some snow on the pavement for a few days. But hopefully we'll get back down to bare pavement as soon as we can.
Thank you. And as the policy says, we don't go into neighborhood routes if it's under 4 inches. Is that correct?
That is the policy.
Okay. Did you want to say anything?
No, just want to say because of the cold weather, we are suspending recycling for the rest of the week.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for that quick update related to the report. Appreciate it. All right. Moving on, our last report is our monthly finance report. Matthew, thank you for bringing this report and the attached ones to it. Is there anything in particular you want to highlight from it?
Yes. So we put together a few slides to go over.
Betsy will be so happy with you.
I will be. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have the slides in for Councilperson Peters as well.
We all benefit, Betsy.
So we didn't want to sound the alarm, but just make you all aware of current sales tax collections. Usually around this time we are comparable to the last year, but this year we're running around 600,000 less than we did last year, and that's only an issue because we forecasted more revenue or more sales tax than we did the previous year. So it's not so much as to look at this quarter to quarter comparison, but just to be cautious of what may be to come, especially since nationally we were down in retail sales for the month of January for the first and that October, November, December time period as well. So here you can see the sales tax collection. We beat, January was the only month that we beat from last year. And so in total, we were down, I don't have my total sheet. I believe it was in the neighborhood of $300,000 for sales tax, and then the same for use tax, and here's the use tax comparison. Not quite as big of numbers and not as big of change as the millions for sales tax, but it's still a $300,000 decrease year over year. So are there any questions about sales or use tax?
I think, I guess I would have, I have a question. When we get closer to sort of our mid-year, I mean, this is the first quarter, we go to the mid-year, DeCarlin or Matt, what do you all do if we're not staying, getting closer to our forecasted based on our budget?
Yeah, so then we start making decisions on what do we not do. And so if you get to the point where we're at, you know, halfway through the year and we see that our revenues are not keeping pace, then, you know, you start suspending different type of initiatives for purchasing. You may stop filling vacant positions. And so there's a number of things that we're going to look at doing. And so right now, the first quarter, we're watching to see exactly how things add up. We are putting together a plan on what we will do and what we can't do. And then if we get into that second quarter, then we'll start making those hard decisions. We'll kind of give a report on exactly what we have to adjust.
So for the last 3 years around this time, we've seen that our forecasts were lower than what our actual, or, you know, it seemed like the trend was that we were a little bit more conservative with that coming forward.
Yep.
And we were able to then really think about investing in our employees and increasing the pie. So is one of the, I mean, are we looking at still trying to figure out if we can give raises as we look at cost of living increases?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
And so it's not necessarily just maybe not filling vacancies for some.
Yeah. And there's no, there's a number of things that you can decide not to do. And so it's just looking at what projects that we have out there. I mean, we have a lot of things that are capitalized that we're pulling out of the individual funds. You know, we buy our vehicles out of funds as opposed to pulling that out of our capital fund. And so there's a number of things that we can say, okay, we're not going to be able to do this because of our cost.
And we can expect that update sort of like, you know, just I mean, the monthly finance report is one place to see it. But then also, as we're talking about budget priorities, I'm assuming.
So one of the big things that we're going to do is, you know, quarterly, we're going to give a report on exactly where we're at.
Okay.
And so that'll be done at the council meeting. So you'll know exactly what's going on and what's not going on.
Yeah, Nick.
Matthew, did I understand that this is reflective of a national trend?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, nationally, retail sales were down about 1%, and that was the largest decrease, I believe, in almost a year in retail sales being down. And so that's not just something that affected Columbia. It was more of a national trend.
Yeah. And I'd just point out, I guess, the obvious that this isn't simply a matter of how much tax that we're able to take in. It's a matter of retail outlets not receiving as much in the way of sales. And
that's
that
correct.
Impacts the economy across the board.
Yep.
Yeah, Lisa.
We knew that we were going to have a shortfall at some point from the last round of budget discussions that we had, not specifically here, but so one thought that I have is I'm wondering, could we be more proactive, more in front of knowing what the plan's going to be to make adjustments?
Yeah, so yes, and that's our goal. And so I do want to talk about, well, when we talked about the shortfalls, it wasn't necessarily that we're going to have a revenue shortfall. What we were saying is that our expenditures are growing faster than our revenues are growing.
Right.
And so we are
clearly understood.
So
we weren't at
the point where we're at a deficit. It's just being mindful that we may have to look at additional revenue sources, or we may have to look at some different initiatives on how we're doing programming.
So that on top of some of the what we're looking at right now is an
yes.
additional concern.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other council comments for this one? No, thank you. Did you want to highlight any other parts of your report?
Yes, so we have the cash balances in for the first quarter as well. And so we went over this last week, but Councilperson Peters had asked us to bring this back to actually do the presentation. So that's what we have here today.
So this is our first quarter cash balance. This is the total amount of cash that the city has at the end of 12/31/2024. And then kind of a breakdown of the different kind of buckets we put those in, operating cash, restricted cash, and capital projects. Overall, our total cash quarter to date was down 2%. Year to date, it was up 4%. This isn't too unexpected. Typically, this is the low point of our cash levels because this is before we receive property tax remittances, which usually kind of boosts that back up to where we would expect it to be by March 31st when we have our next quarter examination of this.
Thank you for this.
Yeah, no problem. And then, so then this is just a breakdown of our operating cash by the different categories that we have. This is the pie chart, and then here's our table. And then just a couple things I wanted to highlight here was that utilities is the biggest driver of this decrease in operating cash, and that's usually expected as well because at the beginning of each fiscal year, we move money out of operating cash and into capital projects. So you usually see a dip year to year at this time. The other change is general fund that was down 7% quarter to date. And the biggest driver there was actually the transfer to the VERF from the general fund that we did at the end of the fiscal year. It's about a $5 million transfer to kind of help us get vehicles purchased and things of that sort. And then the next section is our restricted cash balances. This one's just showing all the different restricted kind of buckets we put these things in and their levels. And then this table again. The one thing, the biggest driver, this was up 9% quarter to date. And the biggest driver of this was our debt obligations. So how our debt obligations work is every month we put more money into that bucket to prepare us for paying off our debt we have to pay. And the biggest drawdown on that debt is at the end of the fiscal year, so 9/30/2024. So we're starting to build up that bucket to prepare for the next payment of our debt. Go to the next category. So this is all of our capital project money, and this is the different categories we kind of put those in. And this one is that typically for this time of year, you do see this increase because, like I said, with that operating cash, money gets moved out of those operating funds and into their capital projects. So that's kind of why that quarter to date 8% increase is there. And I think that's it. Yeah. So I can answer any question, or we can answer any questions you guys might have on that.
Any questions for staff?
I just have a question about the transit. I think I probably know the answer to that, but you've had a year-to-date change of minus 96%.
Yeah, that was probably bus purchases. That's where we purchase our buses from. So there was probably a big purchase of the buildup of that cash, that $3 million probably went to bus purchases.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? No, thank you. And thank you for improving the process of making the images for us to follow along with. Appreciate that. All right, moving on. We're now at the end of our meeting, and now time for general comments of the public. Would anyone from the public wish to speak?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. When I'm stepping up tonight, I am stepping up, as you've said many a time, people can talk on any subject they choose. This is going to cover several pieces of a larger puzzle. Tonight, we're hearing about electric rates. If you think about it, the price of eggs is going higher and higher. I personally have a $30 increase April 1st, and that's called rent. Those on fixed income, I've always been told if you do not take care of the low bottom of the scale, you don't have to worry about the city's budget. You won't have to have a budget when you don't stop and think, wait a minute, we're not taking care of the poor. In this suggestion, we do not know why the city of Columbia supplies electricity to the city of Fulton. To my surprise, this past week, I'm driving south on 63. I get to the stadium intersection going south, and I look to the left. I'm looking at the smokestack of the nuclear power plant in Fulton. We all know Fulton to be about 20 miles away, but why are we overly concerned about utilities if we could switch Fulton to the nuclear and let Columbia be itself, not taking on another town's electrical usage? When I mention all these different things, life does revolve around the almighty dollar and how we can help. And you know, I've helped for the homeless for all these years. I'm very grateful for everything the city's done. in a family situation, when I say the price of eggs, I've just told one business, and I need others to hear me. A family needs eggs, or do they? If you look closely at the word coal milled flax seed, it is a ratio equal to an egg that you can use off the package of coal milled flax seeds to equal the use of an egg. We all need protein. I stand here as a 17-year diabetic, and boy, have I ever used an awful lot of flaxseed. I take no medication. God bless you all.
Thank you. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Good evening, Jackie Sample, Ward 3. Just wanted to bring to your attention, this is kind of a state-level issue, but I really want our city to be aware of it. It's a lawsuit that our attorney general has signed on to called the Texas versus Becerra case. Very brief introduction. This is the lawsuit is basically trying to repeal Section 504. There's lots of different stories and interpretations on how they got to that decision, but that is what the lawsuit states. I've attended multiple meetings and had conversations with attorneys, and that is the gist of that. And so I wanted to bring it to the city because while it may not impact city business directly, it very much impacts the citizens of Columbia. It impacts children who are living with disabilities. It impacts adults who are in supported living and rely on 504 funds to support that position. It impacts businesses, impacts employees in those businesses because it threatens their protections for equity and access to be able to work while they have a disability. So as a city, I think it's really important. I don't know that there's ever been a precedent that's been set. I'm asking for that to be considered, that a statement or a letter of inquiry, I would have a different word for it, but we'll go with inquiry, to the Attorney General, just kind of pushing back a little bit and said this is not in the best interest for our citizens, and will you please reconsider being part of this lawsuit? That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Hello, everyone. I'm Sue Tu Forte. I live on the east side of town. I just want to say thank you. All of you are here tonight in this weather, this treachery. You're showing up to help us. All of you who are here doing your duty in such a big way. Be safe. I'll be back. But take care. Thank you for
thank
being
you,
here.
Thank you, Sue, too. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Demetria Stevens, Ward 3. I am here tonight with a concern of the basketball courts that are going to be redone in Douglas Park. I want to throw out some names for you guys to consider. There are some men that have worked countless hours in that park that should be considered. If you're going to put a name on a court, you should take in consideration of individuals who have spent countless hours in Douglas Park. I came to to Columbia, Missouri in 94 and had the honor to work for the Community Recs Department under Wanda Faye Elbert. And I was very fortunate to work alongside my coworkers, Scotty Williams, Tracy Edwards, and Rufus Broadus. Two of those older men, they're older than me, a few years, are here tonight. But I really hope you would consider, there's gonna be, I think, two or three courts. But you should really consider those men having those names on those courts, not just that gentleman from university. I've looked at your budget. I get what it looks like and why you pull or you take monies from individuals and have donations given so it doesn't come out of your budget. But it would be a slap in the face to this community placing a name on a court that has done nothing. I've been here almost 31 years. I had to research the gentleman that you're going to put on that court. And you really should consider individuals who have done the work, who have engaged, who have kept countless young men off the streets and out of trouble. Think about what you're doing. Consider us. Do not do what you've done in the past. Just had a project and just ran with it. Consider individuals that have been born and raised here. You're going to do a project. Think about who's doing the work here. It should be a reflection. I get what they're doing out there on the south side of town, but Central City, you got to think about the people that have put the work in. So when y'all get those courts going, think about them names. Talk to the people. Have another meeting. Engage the community before you do that, because that is inappropriate.
Thank you, Demetra. Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
I am Erica Buford, and I'm in the third ward. I know most people, if they're going to come up, are going to talk about the name change that they may want on the basketball court for Douglas Park. One of the things, what I would like to talk about is how information is spread to the community. From what I understand, it was with Be Heard and the 2023 Douglas Park Juneteenth. I have mentioned to the council over the years that trying to get communication to this community, it's needing to be, whether it's foot traffic or in the mail, phone calls, it's more so than the internet. The effort with the Juneteenth, I would have thought that going to the Cosmo Park with the village, that Juneteenth would have probably been the best, been a better one to go to as well. I'm hoping that in the last week, since this has come up again, that there has been some more communication with the city, VU, MU, coming back to the table. There needs to be some dialogue with some more community members, not just one or two, because one or two does not represent the whole community. Was there any conversation with Dr. Neville, who's the principal at Douglas? I know that Douglas Park is City of Columbia, but that is in her backyard. And were those colors considered, blue and white? Then I also think about, I would not want the city to start making precedents with getting donations and funding and going around town and quote unquote beautifying parks without the community input and getting the footwork done. And then lastly, I think about Indian Hills Park, where there's a Frisbee Park, and which families out there are actually doing Frisbee? And then we have a dog park by the family shelter instead of out there in all that land.
Thank you, Erica. Anybody else from the public wish to speak?
It's Kimberly, and I just wanted to say that I am a product of what those men did for the community there. I was a member of their basketball teams, and I did move away right after high school in the 90s, but they carried us a long way as people who were born and raised in public housing. I lived in California for about 30 years, and then I returned maybe a month ago, And to hear this news has been very devastating to me. So I wasn't familiar with your processes or, you know, what you have done to make this change. But I would like to hear that you guys will reconsider and to understand that there is more than just the negative image that you hear. I, too, have lost family members down at Douglas Park, but that is not the basis of who we are and what is validated with the group of people in our community. It is more than that. It is more than the tragedy. It has been lifelong lessons that I have learned, that I receive from people like Scotty, and Tracy is a cousin of mine, a very close cousin of mine. And so I would just like to say, and if I didn't say it before, I've appreciated you. I've appreciated what they did to bring the positive energy into the community. And I am doing well for myself with the help that I got from those men, and Rufus also.
Kimberly, will you say your last name for the minutes?
My last name is Jordan.
Thank you. Would anybody else from this public wish to speak?
Good evening, Tracy Wilson, Clee Camp, Race Matters Friends. I'm gonna try to read quickly what I sent to Gabe Huffington. I think a question that needs to constantly be put forward to the council is, do we have all the right people sitting at the table when we make a decision? And I think that there were some steps skipped here and probably a lack of cultural humility as well. I did thank Gabe, I did talk to him, he was very helpful. I have some concerns related to equity that I would like to raise. Number one, corporate branding in public spaces. I'm troubled by the precedent of allowing extensive corporate branding and logos in public parks. This raises questions about the commodification of public spaces and the role of parks and recreation in facilitating such arrangements. The lack of structural interventions. The current branding and marketing does not appear to offer any tangible benefits or structural interventions for marginalized communities. Limited impact on the local community. How many local children and families will benefit from the MU branding and the associated basketball-related initiatives is unclear. As you know, MU's done away with DEI. They're not doing race-based scholarships, et cetera. So I'm curious who they're impressing with their large footprint. Misalignment with DEI goals. I don't know if we still have those or not. The state's and MU's actions regarding DEI and minority recruitment raise concerns about the sincerity and depth of this corporate partnership. Inadequate community engagement, which I addressed in the beginning. Do we have all the right people sitting at the table? That seems to be a consistent theme. A need for structural investment. MU and other potential partners should be encouraged to invest in structural interventions that address the root causes of inequality. City officials should also be equipped to resist corporate initiatives not aligning with equity goals. They're also missing meeting minutes. So if you want to go back and do homework on this, you have to watch a whole video to get it. And I think that's a sunshine violation. And I think the city should work very quickly to figure out a remedy for making sure that we have city council meeting minutes. And I'm not blaming Sheila. She works very hard. But we added a whole bunch of people to the city's roles. And we should make sure that they have those minutes. Those are things that are required so we know how people voted and what they were doing. And also, the city manager, you signed that contract for that marketing agreement. And there's something amiss here that we don't understand, the history of what's going on with that park and what's happened over the years. It would be wise to go back and do a little homework. Thanks.
Thank you, Tracy. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Hello, my name is Scotty Williams. I worked for Parks and Rec for over 30 years, and we put in a lot of work down at the park. Myself and Rufus brought us there, and we didn't really do it for the notoriety. And I appreciate everybody wanting, you know, have our names put on the court and everything, but we just want to pay homage to Moonlight Hoops for what we, you know, put in for all that time and the service that we did. we appreciate, I mean, we, that court really needs to be renovated, and we appreciate the donations and everything. And if it has to be named after Mr. Cox, you know, we really don't know who it is, but if it has to be named after him, that's fine. But we're willing to play at least one court be named in tribute for Moonlight Hoops. And hopefully that could be done. Hopefully you guys will keep that in consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Scotty. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Doc Bross. I also worked with Park Recreation for a number of years. And I'd like to reiterate what Scotty had just said about us not really ringing a bell about whose name and this, that, and the other. That never was the purpose. Purpose was to eventually get renovation down there that was promised 20 years ago. We did this program down there to be able to give the kids something to do. We worked with at-risk kids for numerous years, and the idea was to keep your finger on the pulse. And we worked with, in conjunction with the Columbia Police Department. A lot of people didn't know that. But, and it was really was a experience that allowed us to be able to show kids that wasn't your enemy all the time. And a lot of kids got to see that. And as a matter of fact, we had one of our gentlemen here, Roy, was one of our products, and I'm very proud of him. And I just want to say, you know, I thank you guys for giving us time to come up, voice our opinion, you know, whatever the outcome may be. We just like there be a process that can be transparent so that everybody can understand what's going on. We got a chance to talk to Valerie today, and we appreciate you being able to talk to us. But thank you, guys.
Thank you, Rufus. Anybody else from the public wish to speak?
All right. I'm Anthony Johnson. I'm born and raised in Columbia, K through 12. Rufus was actually one of my first barbers. He used to cut my hair. I was one of the little kids running around. Scotty used to pick up and throw on the back of the car. And like, it's just like, there's nothing that anybody can say that can put in perspective how much this group of men, and it's not just those two, but that group of men, mean to our community. So I understand that there was a process, you know. So I see a lot of blame going back about what you guys should have done, or we should be paying attention or whatever. So I think we could all disagree that we need to work on something that's better so that everybody can be involved in the process. So that's just something that we learned. I don't think it has to be a thing where we're pointing fingers or anything like that. But I do know that right here at this moment, like, we are here. So whether you want to say that we missed it or you missed it, I'm not really concerned with that. I'm just concerned with making sure that we get a good outcome that everybody can be happy with. Okay. So just keep that in consideration. And thank you, guys.
Thank you, Anthony. And would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Five, a firm drive. I love what everybody said. If you think about Douglas Park and you think back to when we grew up here, I grew up here in this community. Back even before Douglas Park was where all the African-American families done their stuff. We couldn't go to Cosmo Park. There was other places we couldn't go. So with that being said, we had so many people that made Douglas Park what it is today. When Scotty and Rufus came up, we had another guy, Tracy Edwards. And Tracy did so much down there in our community. Tracy unfortunately left us, but Tracy was the leader. It was a group called First Ward Ambassadors that really worked their tail off. They used to ride a city bus when we was having issues with the city bus, with people at the mall, be down at Douglas Park at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. These guys gave their time and all of that. So when we look at this community, and if we go back, we came a long way, but we got a long way to still go. So what do? We just take a look, and if we're going to start throwing out things and stuff to people, let's look at the people that's doing the work. And I know if you ask Scotty and Rufus to come back, and hopefully we'll get Midnight Hoop started again down there, that's the goal, is to bring it back, get it going, and all of that with a better facility that we could get more young generations down there to do what they would love to do. Thank you all.
Thank you, James. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Althea Hightower. I'm actually speaking on behalf of Fun City Youth Academy. I'd like 5 minutes if I can. Thank you.
She'll add two at the end, so.
Absolutely. I'm actually a little bit nervous because I really want to say something about what it means to me to be from Columbia, Missouri. I am born and raised here. When I was about, I don't know, maybe 7, I had this T-shirt that said, "Keep it cool in Douglas Park, because I can make a difference." I haven't even thought about that shirt in a really long time until this came up. And it occurred to me when we were meeting with Valerie and Rufus and Scotty were there and they're talking about all the things that Parks and Rec was doing when Community Rec, when Ms. Juana Faye and Bill Thompson were in charge and all the things that we were doing. And I remembered that shirt and I realized how much I took that to heart and how important these people and this legacy is to me. And so when this Parks and Rec post went viral and I saw it, what first struck me was the voices that were speaking up and what they were saying. And what I heard and what I read was a feeling of disrespect and of dismissal, of not being a part of the process. So I did what I do, and I went and I looked through every council memo that I could find and every note and detail that I could come up with to try to understand why was this important? Who was Coach Cox? Why was he important? And why was what was happening on these courts important? And how did it happen where so many people who it's extremely important to just didn't know? And what I found, personally, I felt that everything was done exactly the way that it was supposed to be done to the letter. But what that means is a process that probably worked really well at the time that it was first thought of, and over time, adjustments that have been made to it, it still missed a lot of people because communications changed. Communications in the last 10 years has changed. I know when to put my trash out because I get a notification from an app. That's how you reach me. I can only speak for myself with that, but that's how you reach me. But when I saw a post on Facebook that was screenshotted and shared to me in Facebook Messenger, another app where I got another notification, what I felt was it's okay for processes to change, and it's time for processes to change. Also, when it comes to naming things specific to Douglas Park, specific to these areas that are so deeply rooted in our heritage, our history, our legacies, that there needs to be a better process in how those things are named. Naming is actually really important. There will always be a Robert E. Lee Elementary School building in Columbia, because that's the name of the building. The name of the school is different. The name of the building is the same. Naming is extremely important to me and to my peers. We want to be able to, as we say, give our flowers to those people who did raise us. My dad worked for the Columbia Housing Authority my entire childhood. My mother worked for the university. I was born on the university campus. I am the definition of Mizzou made, as far as I'm concerned. I grew up at Fun City Youth Academy, which was in the Douglas High School building for decades. Respectfully, it's not any principal's backyard. It's our neighborhood. And this is a citywide issue. It's not just the First Ward, although I felt it was really important that the First Ward councilperson was aware of how we felt. Also in that research, what I found out is that it's not a closed deal. The city, Parks and Rec, and even the donors, they want to have these conversations with the community. They want this engagement. They want the opportunity to take part in our legacy, in our history. And so it seemed to me a very straightforward conversation to have, that as we're going through this process of groundbreaking and of renovation, which is much needed and much wanted, that there can be more conversations. And so I did email Valerie. I also emailed my councilperson for Second Ward, Lisa. I also sent an email to the mayor, and I think all those were forwarded to everyone by Valerie. Thank you very much for that. But that there needs to be processes in place, and not just saying that because maybe somebody didn't like this process, but that it seems very forward-thinking at this point to look at this digital age that we're in. How do you reach more people? How do you cross generations? And how do you keep that engagement and that feedback loop going throughout a process so that you don't end up at the decision-making stage and realize that people don't like it? Also, what I learned from watching Valerie with the West Ash neighborhood is that from concept to execution, there can be a lot of changes, a lot of changed feelings, and there should be a chance for people to speak to that. So I thank everyone who has taken part in this process and for your support, and I look forward to seeing this project get the community engagement that it deserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Did anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Good evening. My name is DeMarcus Thomas Brown. I am in the county, so I'm not in anyone's ward. I'd be closest to Miss Lisa's ward, so I can maybe claim that. I'm speaking on behalf of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in the Columbia, Missouri chapter. And so I want to read what I sent to Councilor Carroll and also Gabe, who's been very helpful in the process with communication. When we started the Southern Christian Leadership Conference chapter for Columbia, we asked permission from the national to deal with and speak to Columbia's issues. We didn't want to take on the burden of the national picture. And we got that permission. The president there, who is DeMarc Liggins, and the council there said, okay, well, we're for this. We'll launch y'all and see this happen because we believe in and are akin to the issues here in Columbia. As many others said, I'm born and raised. My ancestors came into Columbia in 1940 from Bunston, Missouri. Were shipped over there from Virginia as slaves to the Bunston area, moved to West End in Columbia, bought a Sears house, built their house there on Pendleton. And we've been, excuse me, on, yeah, Pendleton, 19 Pendleton. We were there and lost that property. And all of that, and so I'm from here. I remember being Scotty, you know, he used to sing a song called talking about Candyman. You know, Scotty had candy. We would go to him, like they kept us out of trouble, right? And they kept us engaged. I was not always on the trajectory I am now, and had it not been for it's interesting as a, and I'll read the statement, but had it not been for what Douglas Park stood for, a whole community, and so this is more than just a naming of a court. This is about a community and a trajectory of a people. We are aware of what happened with urban renewal in the 1930s and 40s, and this is reminiscent. So what I did, as Ms. Hightower talked about, I tend to be a researcher, and so I sort of asked all the, what we call the OGs, Daryl Williams, and some of the older ones, I won't name her name because I'll probably get in trouble, but some of the other ones, I began to say, hey, how do you feel about this? And they said, you know what? We don't like it, but we're tired. We don't like it, but we're tired. We've seen this time. We remember when they took Park, and we remember when they took, and I thought, oh, what initiative for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to add the voices of the unheard, who are tired, who have seen land and houses stripped away under the guise of we're gonna make things better, but they have been pushed out Railroads Row, which is now the arcade district, and all that. We have seen things. And so they said, oh, this is just more of the same. I said, what could happen if we could build trust in the community as we see the things that are going on in the nation? Wouldn't it be interesting if we could have people come together on the bridge of trust and say, we will be a community together, regardless if we're from Douglas area or not? Right, and so this is the statement that we sent to Councilor Carroll and Mr. Gabe. The Columbia chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference stands with those in the historic Black community of Columbia, Missouri, who in many ways feel unheard and disregarded in the naming of the Frederick Douglass basketball courts.
While we recognize the intention on the behalf of the City of Columbia and other benevolent parties involved are to revitalize, we fear the results may land in what has taken place through the urban renewal initiatives that happened in the city decades ago. The University of Missouri, while an important employer, has not built an adequate bridge to the historic Black community in Columbia and must do better at reaching those stakeholders and advocates in our community. It hasn't always been that way, from what once told me in the past. We humbly submit that Parks and Recreation, the University of Missouri, and Veterans United Foundation reach out to those in this historic Black community regarding their ties to this historic park and listen to the concerns and feedback from those who truly represent those who have put blood, sweat, and tears in this park. We also recommend that the aforementioned parties act on the feedback and remedy the disconnect from the community that is more apt to frequent Frederick Douglass Park in the near future. We are willing to be a conduit, if needed, for the parties involved to hear and be heard, those who are stakeholders and advocates in the historic Black community, but also recognize that there are those who have reached out already, like Anthony Johnson with Columbia Supreme, who have our full support as well. Cordially, Reverend Marcus B. Richardson, who is our president for Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and DeMarcus Thomas Brown, chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, DeMarcus. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
So I want to just say thank you for listening to all these people, and I just want to bring support to the opposition to the 504 lawsuit as well, because as a disabled person in this community, it's very important to me as well and to a lot of my friends. And yeah, I just think that this should be something that the community can go together around to raise our voice and say, I don't think this is right. I think that even if as a whole things go in a direction we don't want to go, that the city can help support the people that it will be affecting. So thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak? All right, we'll go to council comments. Based on the number of comments we had over one specific topic, I think I might kick it first to Valerie rather than starting with Don, because I think you've had some more additional conversations, and if you wanted to start.
I did, thanks. That's unexpected.
Oh, sorry, you don't have to go first if
no,
you don't want to, Valerie.
That's quite fine. Okay. I did have some things to say. So we've been having quite a discussion on the naming of the Douglass Park courts. And I think it's fair to say that our original public engagement failed to reach the group of people who actually use the Douglass Park basketball courts. And as a result, what we ended up with was a plan that needed more vetting in order to serve the community that uses it in a truly authentic way. I see an opportunity here to improve our public engagement. One of the things that I see happening, we have a project and we have a public engagement in 2023. The project takes shape. We need to check in more frequently. We need to make better connections with the community. And I think what happened originally is truly tragic, and the result is hurting a lot of people in the community. I want to speak a bit to what happened next and what's happening right now and what can happen in the future. What happened next was much more encouraging. I have regular office hours on Sunday afternoons. This Sunday, we had Anthony Johnson attend. He's here tonight. We had Alfia Hightower. We had DeMarcus Thomas Brown, Marcus Richardson, and some of the original coaches from Moonlight Basketball. We had Rufus Prados, who's here. We had Scotty Williams, who's here. And we were able to have some conversations that were much more encouraging. Gabe Huffington, who's the director of Parks and Rec, also attended Sunday. This is the first time a staff member has attended my office hours. That was a huge step. It really was. And the discussions that we have were more open and more vulnerable than I have seen in a very long time, especially surrounding city politics. And so I'm thankful and I'm humbled by that. I think we can all acknowledge that no single person can name a public park. The community is not monolithic. And in order to best serve the population that uses the park, they need to see their identity reflected in the surroundings at that park. I'm thankful to the community that showed up yesterday and the community that showed up tonight for speaking up, for being real, for being angry, and not being afraid to share that. I'm thankful for the city staff who showed up and showed some vulnerability, who stayed solution-oriented. I think that's a really big step. This is how I think we repair relationships. This is a first step. It's at least how we start. And I think it's a great time to refocus our efforts on community engagement. Basketball is a team sport. Every coach that I've ever met acknowledges the whole team when they have a win. It doesn't take anything away from one coach to acknowledge the other coaches that came before them and did the work too. And every coach I know would want it that way. That's what I'm hearing from Scotty and from Rufus. And I think that's a good place to have in our park. And so what I notice from our council history is that the action that took place specifically names one court. And so I'd like to make a motion requesting for staff to re-engage with the project donors on the topic of the currently unnamed court and to report back to council with a plan for re-engaging with the public.
I second. Okay, we've got a first and a second. Any discussion on this, on the motion on the table?
Could we get, sorry, Nick.
No, it's okay, go ahead.
What is the Parks and Rec, I mean, I'm happy for the motion, but this seems sort of fluid. Like, could we hear from Gabe or have you talked to him? Where are we with this whole thing? Because this sounds like there's been a lot of conversation, yeah, a lot of discussion, hopefully a lot of active listening. And so where are we with this?
I talked to Gabe this morning, and I think he's ready to talk to you now.
We've got Gabe right here if you want to have Gabe
It's fine
respond.
With me if we can do that in the midst of your motion.
Gabe, would you like to?
Yeah. Okay. So where we are at with the project, so the Facebook post that we made last week was to talk about the start of the construction process. We have been through bidding cycles for our equipment, the court painting, refinishing, the shelter, and so we were getting ready to start. And then when the Facebook post happened, I was contacted by multiple people about the project, the process, where we were at, and how would we go forward. I was able to talk to Valerie, obviously, yesterday. So we are ready to start construction, but the markings on that court is the last step. And so what we would like to do is very much in line with what Valerie has already mentioned in her motion, which is the first step I need to take is to kind of discuss this and provide the feedback to the donors for the project, and then let them know that we would like to take these steps where we speak with the community and we talk to more folks about Douglas Park and specifically Moonlight Hoops. That has come up a lot, and the individuals that were associated with it and that maybe someday we'll be associated with it again. I have learned a tremendous amount about the history of Douglas Park in the last week, just about some of the people and the activities and what it means to a lot of people. So we are very much in line with the motion in terms of my first step would be to obviously talk to donors. And then the second step is to create the process for how we look at the Gold Court, for instance, which has no name on it. We actually, as a Parks Department, recommended the color of that court only as more of a logistics. So you're on the black court or the gold court this evening, which is much like Rainbow Softball Center and Timmy Sports Complex. So we would like to reengage that process and kind of start and get those discussions going and see what we can come up with. I don't have a firm idea of what that looks like. That's obviously something that we'll do with a lot of people in this room as we talk through the project. And so that I think we're definitely in line. We've had those conversations. The one thing I would tell everybody is our goal was to have the basketball court infrastructure in place by the Juneteenth holiday. We actually had someone reach out about a basketball tournament at the park, and we know there's going to be some other activities. So what we would like to do is just continue to put the basketball goals in, the scoreboard in, the shelter in. But we would pause on the markings of those courts until we work through this process. And that process ends with us coming back to council and presenting if it's a new plan or you know, however we come up with, we'll return to council. And then probably can even come back to council with a report and just tell you the process that we're going to go through. I've learned a lot about that as well, just in terms of what a lot of the folks tonight have said about how we engage the public. I think community connectors and some of the things we're doing now are going to help. But there's also some work that myself as a department head and Valerie mentioned as a council member that we can do to engage the community. So we're going to work on that as well. But I think we're all in line with what's been proposed this evening. I just want to make sure nobody gets really mad when they see a dump truck there and we're starting work. Just know that we wouldn't proceed with any court markings until we work through this process.
Thank you.
Questions on the motion or the proposed project?
Well, I appreciate that because, you know, I'm hoping that this can get going while this other process is taking place because, you know, that's the end result we want. But I just want clarity. Valerie, you're just talking about naming of the court. Is that the only thing you're speaking to here? Or is there any other element of the project that would need to be addressed? For instance, the scoreboards. I mean, I'm just wondering.
My motion was specifically towards the naming of the court, but I do think that the colors of the painting, so what was shared was an MU schemed and logo painting. You know, there's been some suggestions out to add Douglas High School colors, for example. I think that's brilliant and beautiful, but I think that we need to come back to the public for that. I think we need an input process to receive those comments so we don't repeat our mistakes of the past. That said, I'm extremely excited to see investment being made in the park. And I don't want to slow that down in any way whatsoever. I want those courts playable as soon as possible.
So I guess I'm just wondering if the motion won't limit these other considerations, because it sounds like, Gabe, you're talking about a conversation that could impact more than the naming of the court itself, or am I missing that?
Potentially. So, for instance, if a court is painted for Moonlight Hoops, recognition of the history of that, we will look at how we would also name or honor the folks that were involved with that program. I've learned it started in 1989, ended right around 2000 with the pandemic. Most of what we are just talking about and what I've talked with some community members before is just to make sure the new goals are put up and new scoreboards. That doesn't impact what would be put on the courts, because that is actually the last step in the process anyways. So that's the part that needs to be paused in the process, and then allow us to go through some additional public input process and then return to you all with a revised plan, new ideas, and what we're going to do with that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Or answer your question?
It does to me. I just want to be sure that the motion is comprehensive enough, I guess, to catch anything else we might want to address with this.
Gabe, I have a quick question for you.
Yep.
The lines on the court, the free throw line, the court boundaries. I'm not a basketball player. I probably sound really stupid. But the things that make it playable, are those a color that depend on the painting scheme that you may change as you get feedback?
Maybe. So I don't know yet. As we start to talk about that, we just need to make sure they're contrasting colors. So if someone is playing, they know where the out-of-bounds line is, free throw line. The lines that are there now are all in white. So what we would make sure is, as we're putting things back together, at the very least we'll have the court markings that are there now would be continuous and back in place. And then as we look at colors of courts and we look at those different aspects of it, we'll come up with a plan just of contrasting colors, essentially, to make sure people can see where they're at.
You ask the players?
Excuse me?
Do we ask the players? That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, yes.
Ask the players. Yeah.
I know there's a few players that are involved with this group that will have an opinion, so yes.
Yeah.
Roy, you had a question.
Yes. So the engagement process has been one of those things that I've been speaking to since before I was even on council, and even more so while on council. You said that you were going to go back to the community to have a more involved conversation. Could you tell us what that process would look like and how would it be different than what it was before?
Okay. So what we would probably need to have are, what we'll do first are some basic concepts, which is normally what happens with a park project, for instance. And we could have some small group discussions. We can have a couple of larger group meetings. We try to make sure, since this is at Douglas Park, we'll be close in the vicinity. So first ward meeting could be at the ARC. I'll lean a little bit on our community connectors and Shauna Johnson and kind of talk to them about how we can kind of spread the word. I also know that there's people in this room that will help spread the word now for the project. And so we'll use our normal channels, but if we needed to send a postcard, for instance, we've done that in the past. So if we go to a number of households within proximity to Douglas Park, that's a process that we could also go through. So we'll have some more conversations with some of the folks here tonight. And then we will make sure that as many folks as possible attend these meetings. So,
can I just also clarify your motion that you had, Valerie? I think was also, so motion and second was made for the convening with the donors on what moving forward, and also to come back to council with the proposed outreach plan or communicate, like how to engagement plan, which I think would also give us an opportunity to give feedback for additional ways. Is that what I understood your motion?
Yeah, the report that I want to hear about is the plan for reaching out to the public, not necessarily the plan for the court.
Okay, yep, that's totally fine. That might be a really great opportunity for us to dive into that process.
Yeah. All right, any other questions? So we have a motion and a second on the table for requesting for staff to engage with the donors for the improvements to Douglas Park's court, as well as come back to us with a report on the additional engagement that is planned within the community. And at the same time, the project is still going forward with the improvements, but this is about the markings, and which is the last step anyway, as you said.
Correct.
Okay, any other discussion on that?
Do I need to amend my motion to include markings?
I don't think
or
so.
Or does no. We have the gist?
No, I think we have the gist. All right. I'm going to go ahead and ask Sheila, will you call roll on the motion? And I'm sorry, what we have on the table?
This is the motion that Councilmember Carroll made and Mayor Buffalo seconded. Mr. Waterman?
I seconded it.
Oh, sorry, Lisa.
She was quick on that.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for that, Gabe, and thank you, Valerie, for that, and thank you for everybody for that attended. You can all still stay here because we have more comments to make. All right, now I'm going to come back to Don Waterman. Or Valerie, do you have any other ones?
Yeah, since Valerie's already started, do you have any other comments outside of Douglas Park that you would care to make tonight?
We've had a bit of a conversation also about public restrooms downtown. Nick Foster has put quite a bit of work into that. I think he'll have some more things to say. I just wanted to lend my support as someone who spends some time downtown. Recently at Living Windows, for example, I had to leave early because my kid had to pee. and that's a reality. I think it's worth exploring this idea in more detail.
All right. I'm going to come back to you. So, Don, we're going to come back to you now. All right, Don, you start. Sorry.
Thank you.
I know I came out of order and it made me feel weird. But go on.
Okay. Regarding the Douglas Park, Anthony, I want to thank you for your comment about this is a learning process for everybody all the way around. So thank you for summing it up that way. Useful piece of information. We'll go forward with it, and we'll see what comes out of it. My only concern is I just want to make sure that we don't delay the renovations. You know, that yes, we can do these in parallel and keep that moving forward. The other thing I want to mention, and I think Mr. Windsor has already departed, but when he was talking about the pausing the electric transmission line in his comments early, it's not to restudy where it should go. The reason we paused it is just to get some updated cost estimates. The estimates we were working with were approximately 4 or 5 years old, and we've all know what inflation has done over the last 4 or 5 years. So we want to get some updated cost estimates, and that'll come back and we'll discuss that. And I think that's all I've got for tonight.
All right, Betsy.
I just wanted to comment that it's nice to have Fire Station 10 moving forward, since we already have Fire Station 11 in operation. We're sort of going out of numerical order there. Also, I heard about stopping the recycling this week because of the cold weather, and I wanted to thank the staff for making a decision early so that people would know what's going on. As opposed to the confusion that we frequently have. So I don't know whether that's the more PR people you have or just that we're getting back on track. But anyway, I appreciated that.
That's
it for me.
Thank you, Betsy. Yeah. Lisa.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. I just want to thank the entire staff for being here since 8 o'clock in the morning and for staying for the council meetings and for all that you do for our city. Thank you. All of the questions that you always answer and all of your help in making the city run. Thank you. Regarding the Midnight Hoops, last year I attended the Midnight Hoops, and I know that there's a desire for a revitalization and for this to go back to Douglas Park, and it'd be wonderful to see it back there. So that would be exciting, and I'm glad to be supportive of all that took place tonight in discussions and in seconding the motion. I also wanted to congratulate the Columbia Police Department for making an arrest associated with the shootings that took place on February the 12th on Madison. I know that you're working hard and that we want to see a decrease in this community violence, and I wanted to thank you for making your efforts and congratulate you on making that arrest.
All right. So first off, I want to thank everybody that came out to make mention of Douglas Park. I did make a post about the process and procedures and whether people were active and involved. There is a process, there is a procedure, and getting active and involved. I also am open to re-engaging to citizens coming and being a part of a more robust conversation. Anthony spoke to the fact that this was a learning process, but I also think that we have to also take time to learn how city government works as well. It's a two-way street. It is a two-way street. So there were engagements in Douglas Park, and I do feel like that it could have been more robust. And having those conversations with not only Gabe, but also other council members, I constantly say that when we're out campaigning, we knock doors, we take different avenues in order to make sure that we're engaging the community. I've also spoke with them whenever we're engaging for Juneteenth about how we use hair salons and different other spaces and places to make sure that that information is disseminated out to the Black and Brown community. So moving forward, I would hope that we engage and look for different creative, innovative ways to engage, especially Black and brown community, and making sure their voices are heard. And again, I do appreciate you guys coming, but I'm not backpedaling off of my statement of understanding the process and getting involved. It's a two-way street.
Anything else? No. All right. I want to say thank you for everyone for coming, but also just the dedication for the years of service put in. I think we always talk about, and I appreciate the comments made about how communication changes over time, and now we all get messages from apps and everything on. And I have to say, I agree, and I do appreciate all the investment we've made in communications in the last year to increase the opportunities for us to get outreach out. I think looking into notifications and things like that, especially as we look into geofence, how we advertise for certain positions within the city, how can we also about messages and interested parties meetings and where we host them. And yes, I like the creative and innovative ways to improve. And to that point, I do want to comment, you know, we have a few other town hall events coming up over the next week. Next week, we have one on budget priorities. It's on both Tuesday and Wednesday. There's a budget priorities if you want to learn more about the city's budget and how to get your voice heard in it. And then, Betsy, you have your Let's Talk Local next Thursday, the 28th at New Haven. And so if you're in the 6th Ward, are you putting it on your calendar now?
No, okay. It's the 27th, but I don't want to correct the mayor in case it's actually the 28th.
Oh, yes, sorry, the 27th. That's right. Sorry.
Okay, it's the 27th.
I skipped
Thursday.
Ahead for you.
That's okay.
Thursday. Let's Talk Local,
right day,
6
too.
P.m. at New Haven Elementary School. So just those are ways that the city is also trying to increase our how we get the word out in communication. So thank you for that. And then just, I want to say, everyone be patient, shovel your sidewalk, and going forward. But now, Nick. When you're to my left, it messes me up.
You're just so out of order here, Mary.
I know, I'm confused today.
It's okay. I'll go ahead and speak to what Valerie brought up about downtown restrooms. With the community survey, we heard back about concerns of public urination, defecation. This really happens in other places around the city, but it's especially of concern downtown. So I have been looking into that, and I also have gotten some information from a survey of business owners in the district, which was done in 2023, I think, Nikki, that showed significant support for a public restroom, though there are some concerns about those as well. So the intent of this request is to respond to those concerns. So I'll put this in the form of a motion. I move that we ask the city staff to do some work to make a determination about possibilities for locations, cost, and so forth for a downtown public restroom or in the downtown area, that they identify possible locations, determine cost, address maintenance and cleaning, and engage with stakeholders for input. Let me go ahead and get a second.
We have a motion on the table. Do we have a second? Valerie, did you want a second?
Yes, okay. I will second. Sorry.
I think you did. Sorry. All right, discussion.
And this came to us also, by the way, when we were looking at the community survey from staff suggesting that this would be one thing we can do to address concerns about unsheltered in our community. And identify the Portland Loo as a possibility for doing that. I think that this particular facility addresses some of the concerns that are also raised in the survey that came through the district about a public restroom as well.
All right, so we have a motion and a second requesting for staff to come back with information about a public restroom in the downtown area. Do we have any discussion or questions on this? Yeah, Betsy.
I guess as part of that, I'd like to know how other cities deal with this. I mean, the Portland
Loo
is an idea, but I'm like, surely we are not, don't have to reinvent the wheel
right
here.
So requesting in the report to also do other city comparisons.
I'd just like to know how other cities have handled this, besides Portland.
Any other questions of the motion on the table? Yeah, Lisa.
Maybe other cities, specifically our size, would be
comparable.
Helpful.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
College cities.
Yeah, university towns, yeah.
Yeah.
Oops. Any other discussion on the motion on the table for the report to come back? All right, Sheila, would you mind calling a roll on that request?
On the motion made by Councilmember Foster and seconded by Councilmember Carroll, Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes. And I just want to mention a couple of other things that I did over the past couple of weeks. I did a ride along with Officer Cordoba of the Columbia Police Department. And really appreciate administrative staff, command staff for arranging that, and to Officer Cordoba for allowing me to hang out with him for about four hours on a Friday night. It's just one of those things that I think helps to understand somebody's perspective when you're actually alongside them while they're doing that work, and to recognize some of the challenges that they face. And sort of in connection with that, I went and visited our police academy and sat in on one of the classes there, which spoke about trauma and how police officers can deal with the trauma that they experience and witnessing all of the things that they do witness. And I was encouraged by hearing that. I want our police officers to be as healthy as possible. They're better police when they're better mentally. Then I also went to the first responder gala last week and heard more about what they do, and appreciate that they do support our first responders in addressing issues related to trauma and the impact that that has on those folks. So I encourage my colleagues to visit the academy. It encouraged me all the more that that was a good decision for us to make that happen and to put it into place.
Thank you, Nick. To Carlin, anything from staff?
Not today, no.
Nancy, anything? Sheila, anything?
No.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and adjourn us at 8:51. Thanks, all, for coming out. Be careful out there.